Welcome, arcade friends, to episode 14 of the Mobile Arcade Club. This episode, we're discussing two very cool games. One called Tint, which is a very cool watercolour puzzler, and the other is Shantae. Is it Shantae? Shantae? How do you say it, Stephen?
I say Shantae, and I think that's how they say it in the cutscene, so that's how I'm going to go with it.
Shantae. It sounds a bit like shanty, so...
And I think see Shantae. Sort of
pirate aesthetic, yeah. Yeah. Shantae and the Seven Sirens, which is a continuation in the long-running platform action series. So we've got plenty of thoughts on both of those games. And actually, I might drop this one as a bit of a surprise for you, Stephen, or I think this is one that I've been mentioning a little while, is that I saw recently that the devs behind Necro Barista, an Aussie-made indie game about sort of the afterlife and coffee and that sort of stuff, looks very cool. I've played a couple PAXes. They were looking for iPad Mini 4 testers in the week just gone. So I think the thought some time ago about them becoming an Apple Arcade game seems to be becoming all but confirmed, I would say.
Well, that'd be nice. I've heard nothing but positive things about that game from heaps and heaps of people I've spoken to who played it at conventions, PAX and the like. I've not touched it myself, but yeah, just given the positive positive thoughts, it'd be real nice if we could cover it on this show at some point in the future.
Yeah, and certainly I would, the second it becomes available on the store, I'd be downloading that thing so fast and getting right into it. But that's potentially a future episode. In this one, let's begin with Tint from Leica Studios, who are based in Bangkok, Thailand.
Indeed.
So this little lovely watercolour puzzler, Stephen, what did you make of this?
Yeah, well, if you remember from last time, we chose it because we thought it might be nice to have a fairly chilled, meditative, just nice way to zone out from everything going on in all around the world at the moment. And gosh, it really does fulfill that. I found, you know, chuck on a pair of headphones, you just sort of lose yourself in this nice little watercolor, puzzly, zen zone, I guess I'd call it. It's ostensibly a puzzle game. You've got a bunch of sort of colors that you start with, and then you have to draw a path from the color to like a little paper flower, essentially, to open that flower up, and it needs to be the right color in order to open. And that opens up a whole series of different puzzle elements, because you can, as they're watercolors, you can cross over different colors to combine them and create new colors. And that, yeah, just opens up some really interesting puzzles as you go along. And I found it really just quite nice and relaxing as something to tune out with after a long day of working from home.
Yeah, it's a clever game in that it does inspire some, you know, creative problem solving and, you know, creativity in terms of, you know, almost physically, you know, painting a picture to come up with solutions and that sort of thing. But yeah, the interesting thing, the whole premise behind the combination of colors and almost making sort of a maze with these puzzles in trying to get the, you know, this little splotch of this splotch of paint from, you know, one part of the canvas to this little origami folded thing you said before. That, yeah, you start off with your primary colours, so your red, blue and yellow, the colours of the mighty Adelaide Crows, which I imagine a decent section of our audience would be highly familiar with.
I think we're probably the only two, but of course. Get around.
Yeah, especially with our predominantly US audience. But, yeah, the interesting thing is that beyond the primary colours, so obviously you combine, you know, two primary colours to make a secondary colour, but beyond that, if you try and combine any further colours, it'll just create this stodgy grey, which is accompanied by this lovely squelching sound.
Yes, you really know you've goofed it when you hear that.
Yeah, and so you can't you can't continue painting or drawing on that line. That's it. But a little double tap on the screen will sort of undo your move or undo reset the canvas, and you can set off again. But yeah, I thought it was really, really clever that a lot of these puzzles were so creative in the way that you had to think not only about, okay, where am I drawing this line, but also thinking about, okay, how are these colors going to interact with one another? So if there's a green line there, if I try and draw through that with any other color other than green, it's going to stuff up. So I've got to think, okay, how can I create green? How can I then draw to this green without blocking off the path to other colors that need to get to different destinations? And yeah, all of a sudden it creates some very clever little puzzles.
Yeah, I definitely found there were certain points fairly early on where you'll sort of have to draw from one side of the screen to another to, you know, to connect a color with its origami piece. But then you realize very quickly that, oh, you've potentially blocked the way between another color and its origami flower that you need to get to. So you have to start thinking of what's the order in which you want to do this. Is there another path you could take around that doesn't block? Maybe the color that you put down in the first place actually needs to be there so you can combine it with another color to get to another of the origami flowers. It was really, promoted creative problem solving, I feel, and it was very low risk in that if you do goof anything up, as you say, you can just double tap the screen, go back, and you can try again. No harm, no foul. And if you really found yourself getting absolutely stumped, which it didn't happen a lot, but it definitely did happen for me, it had a really pleasant sort of hint system, just a little button in the top left corner, if you use this, you're not a real gamer sort of prompts or anything like that. Just tap it and it will sort of show a finger drawing a line slowly and calmly from, you know, the first move that it suggests that you do. And often once you see, okay, I do this to begin with, often that was enough to trigger the rest of the process in my brain. But if it wasn't, you could just keep tapping the hints and it would essentially show you one way to do it. But I found it was often not the only way to do it. It was some of the solutions I came to felt like this feels, it didn't feel like the intended solution, but it still worked. And this is a very weird comparison, but it's a little bit like how I found solving some of the shrines in The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. You'd sort of get to the end and go, oh, I got the thing where it needs to go. I feel like I broke the game in doing so, but the game doesn't punish you for trying out of the box ideas if you want to just go around something or through something that it doesn't seem like the correct way to do it. If it works, it works, and that's all it really asks of you.
Well, I think that's the joy of a lot of these games that inspire creativity and promote creative solutions and problem solving, is that, you know, there is no correct way to play this, or there is no correct way to solve a particular puzzle, which I think is fantastic. Mm. And I think it touches on the themes that you mentioned about being a low-risk environment. And I think it also helps that a lot of these puzzles are very, very self-contained and, while not necessarily simple in the easy sense, but simple in terms of they're not a grand labyrinth of sort of puzzles and mazes to try and get through. You'll get through them, you know, relatively quickly, but it's not something that perhaps I just haven't got deep enough into the game yet and they're going to throw some pretty beefy puzzles at me.
Yeah, potentially. It does seem like, given the limits of only being able to combine colors once, I feel like it's not going to get so ridiculously complex that you're not going to have to, you know, go between four or five different colors to get the exact shade of lilac that it's asking for or anything crazy like that. Mm. But I think, yeah, it's just really nice how you can solve things creatively. And it's really fun to play with in a tactile sense. It really, just the way that the watercolor paint interacts with the canvas underneath, and the way that a lot of there'll be some objects sort of around the canvas, and usually you can tap them. They won't do much. They might just wobble or something, but it just felt extremely tactile, which is reminding me a little bit of Over the Alps that we talked about last episode. But yeah, it really just, you know, you tap the paint with your finger, you move it around. It just feels good to play, regardless of the, you know, the puzzles are fantastic, but even, you know, if they weren't there, it's just a nice toy to play with at its core.
Yeah, and I think the I think to shamelessly sort of self-promo, which I think I do way too often on this show,
it's is fine. You've earned it.
When I like to think I have, without, you know, big noting myself too much, but the I wrote last year a feature about mobile games and the perception of game, you know, mobile gamers and, you know, who or what are considered real gamers and that sort of stuff. But the thing that is often overlooked in a lot of those discussions is how a lot of games, and I would argue that Tint is one of those mobile games that simply would not be as effective if it were not on a mobile platform, without those tactile touch controls, and with how responsive it is with the touch controls, in terms of, as you say, you know, sometimes on the table with your little canvas, there's an apple that you can poke, or a coffee cup that you can, you know, tap and it'll rattle or something. But yeah, just the sensation of tapping and dragging across the screen these, you know, little splotches of watercolor paint, and even a little bit further on. So once you've got past puzzle 20, it starts introducing water droplets onto the page, which you can use to touch and drag to almost erase. It almost acts as an eraser, so okay. It creates a gap in say a line of paint that you need to create a gap in order for another color to get through without ruining that color, or you know unintentionally, or you know, not wanting to combine it with another color, which would then, you know, ruin it for whatever puzzle you're trying to solve. So it's just very satisfying to touch and play this game.
I'm curious about this Zen mode that I can see that you've thrown up in the comments, in the notes, because I haven't played enough to unlock that, so I have no idea what this is. So I'm curious as to, yeah, your quick summary. What is Zen mode?
Yeah, so I am in the same boat. However, Zen mode is something that I believe is a relatively recent update to Tint, and that's another thing that's worth commenting on, is that so Leica Studios have been very forthcoming with the update. So I semi-regularly see Tint listed in my app updates, saying it's received new levels, new puzzles, or a new feature. And I believe Zen mode is another one that, once you've completed the, what I believe is referred to as the first book of puzzles, which I believe is about 50 puzzles, because I think there's over 200 puzzles in total and counting. There's a fair amount of stuff here. But Zen mode, I believe, it throws a bunch of really simple puzzles at you, sort of uninterrupted. And, you know, as long as you want to keep going, it'll keep throwing you really simple puzzles, which I think the main objective is to try and design the most beautiful solution possible, which taps into one of the things that I like about Tint, as someone who is very non-artistic in sort of the traditional sense of, you know, painting and drawing. I struggle to draw legible stick figures at the best of times. So
who can relate?
Yeah. The thing about Tint is that it is, at its core, it's not a game about creating artistic masterpieces, and it's not about trying to draw pretty pictures and that sort of stuff. It's mainly about, as we've discussed, it's mainly about problem solving and figuring out what color combinations work, or how do I draw these lines. It's almost sort of like more of a maze type puzzler than it is, you know, trying to draw stuff. However, I think the Zen mode in particular, that's probably what will appeal most to people who are very keen to experiment with the watercolors and, you know, create pretty looking things other than the wretched messes that I create.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be a fun way to play, because you know, not that it's a great inconvenience or anything, but as you're playing through the normal game, you complete a puzzle, you move to the next one. It's got sort of that structure to it, whereas Zen sounds like it's just play until you don't feel like playing anymore, and that could be a really pleasant way to just while away some minutes, some hours, who knows, depending on how much you enjoy it.
Yeah, and I think especially for the current times that we're living in, because at the time of recording, the sort of the we're almost, it feels like the at the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic, where pretty well all of the Western world, and I don't know beyond that, is in some form of isolation or quarantine or lockdown and that sort of thing. And I think one thing that will endear Tint to a wider audience, especially families with younger kids and that sort of stuff, is that Zen mode, you know, may be something that's quite good for the kids to, you know, tap on the screen and, you know, experiment with colours and learn about, you know, how colours interact and how, you know, just you know, kids love tapping on a screen and drawing things and, you know, just being creative and letting loose. So while the core game of Tint may not satisfy that element of creativity in, you know, people looking for that or young kids, the Zen mode aspect of Tint may be what they're looking for. And that may be something that opens up Tint to a wider audience than, I mean, what it already is. I mean, who wouldn't want to play a puzzle that looks as beautiful as Tint?
Yeah, gosh, I think that's the thing that I'm mostly taking away from Tint is just how incredible it looks. Just the way that the paints interact, I've never seen something so... It just looks so beautiful in how it all works. I'm not hugely experienced with watercolor, so it might be all entirely unrealistic, but what little experience I have, it just looks pretty dang close to the real thing. And yeah, that's what I'm going to take away from this. It just looks and sounds, the whole experience is just so just chilled out, man. I loved it.
Yeah, and I think as for the watercolor, I think I do remember reading an article or an interview, and I do apologize because I can't remember the source off the top of my head. It was a little while ago, but I believe the folks at Leica Studios did actually spend a fair bit of time working on the watercolor aspect of Tint and sort of experimenting with ways to get it to function in a realistic way. So I believe that is something that they have put a significant amount of time into, you know, creating a very genuine and authentic watercolor experience. So, but I think one thing that's worth finishing on with Tint is that this is a game, if you've got, well, regardless of what headphones you've got, if you've got nice headphones, then fantastic. But if you've just got anything, then wear them, because Tint, they've generated some lovely soundscapes which are just really soothing and meditative and just so pleasant. So they so pleasantly round out the experience of, you know, painting with these very pretty watercolors. And it's quite clever how it sort of works its way into sort of that thing I keep banging on about, you know, form and function in one, because beyond in the puzzles that are in series from 20 to 30, where I'm talking about the water droplets on the page, what have you got in the background? You've got soothing rainfall, and with that going through your ears, through your headphones, oh my word, that's absolute zen. It's bliss.
Lovely. Well, I guess on that, should we move on to the next game for this episode?
I think we shall. And I think roles are a bit reversed here, Stephen. I think you spent more time with this one than I did with Tint. So I'm going to let you take the lead with this.
Yeah, absolutely. So the second game, Shantae and the Seven Sirens from Way Forward out of California in the US of A. It's a part of a long-running series, as you mentioned. It sort of goes all the way back to the Game Boy Color. So that'd be, gosh, early to mid-90s. I should probably have looked that up. But it's a very a storied series, let's say. And yeah, it's a platform adventure game. You play as a half-genie by the name of Shantae. And you have you're sort of on a trip to go to an island to perform in the Half Genie Festival, and that's where your story begins. And the game itself, it sort of superficially looks and plays a little bit like a 2D Metroid game, in that you've got sort of a grid-based map that you're exploring. You fill it out as you walk around the map. You'll be finding say, items or abilities that can help you to get to new places. You might sort of come across a door or something that is impenetrable for the time being, but you'll keep a mental note of it, come back to it when you've got a new ability, and you'll be able to find new areas. And that's sort of the core game loop, I guess, is exploring, finding new things, and using those new things to explore some more. And I found myself getting, in a good way, nicely lost in this little world of exploration.
Yeah, nice. And that's, I think, one thing that's immediately struck me with Shantae is that I was really impressed with how smoothly it runs on iPhone, and with how it looks really sharp. It's got these, you know, lovely crisp vibrant visuals, and I think that's something that has been a staple of the series pretty well. Its entire run. Not that I'm one who's played a lot of Shantae in the past, but it's a series that, you know, has sort of been, you know, in the periphery for quite some time. And I did the intriguing thing of playing this predominantly with the touch controls. So with the virtual buttons on the touch screen. So the left hand side is your virtual thumbstick, or your directional buttons, as you will, and on the right hand side is where you've got your other buttons to press to do various interactions. Like there's a button that's a dedicated interact button, so it'll be for speaking with characters or for whipping enemies with your hair or that sort of thing. And you know, various other interactions like jump and that sort of stuff. There are buttons there as well. And I think this is something that I've seen from a few mobile games that do this as well. And I thought it was pretty well implemented in the mobile port of Rogue Legacy a little while ago. It's quite modular, quite customizable, so that you can go into the options and, you know, move some of these buttons around. So I find that the default positioning of these buttons tends to be a little bit close together and a little bit cramped for my liking. In the settings, you can literally tap and drag where you want these virtual buttons to sit, so I have a greater gap between the interact or the attack and the jump button. And I found that, you know, it controlled pretty well. It's a perfectly, you know, competent way of playing the game. However, it's certainly not what I would say the ideal way of playing the game. And, you know, these sort of 2D platform action adventure games are certainly ones where precision and having full control over your character is desired.
Yes.
So I would say controller is absolutely the way to go with Shantae.
Yeah, I get the impression that this one was probably designed with a controller in mind. I'm not quite sure the whole development process that they did, but it strikes me as a game that might have been, if it came out on Switch first, no one would bat an eyelid. It seems designed for that kind of controller input, that kind of platform. And for that reason, I played exclusively with a controller. The sort of little controller with a phone mount in it was, I found, a pretty decent way to play it. And I found, you know, it's all super, as you were saying, super fluid, super easy to control. And I really liked the way, I think this is a hallmark of the Shantae games, is it animates super nicely. I was a little bit worried sometimes when you see these kind of animated, vectorized sort of graphics in games. It might just be me, but sometimes I get a little mental trigger of sorts. Just like, if it looks like it could have been a Flash game from 10 years ago, that just sets off in my brain and I can't get the idea out of my brain. But this, it looks fantastic and it totally avoids that kind of aesthetic somehow. I guess it's sort of very nicely detailed. It's super fluidly animated. It doesn't look cheap, for want of a better word. It looks like a very professional, well animated sort of production.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's another thing that, you know, the overall presentation of Shantae is quite sharp. And I totally get what you're saying about sort of that looking like a Flash game and that sort of stuff. And that's not to diminish the quality of some Flash games, but there is I do know what you're referring to, but I sort of lack the language to adequately describe what I'm sort of thinking in this regards. But I know that it's you know, there are some games where you play them, and just the way that, that some of the animations or the character models, the way that they move or whatever, just jars a little bit from the experience. It just doesn't. There's something profoundly satisfying about a game that from when you input a command through the controller or the touchscreen or that sort of stuff through to the animation, that, you know, throughout that process, there's something really, really satisfying about when a game nails sort of it's that real intangible game feel aspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think Shantae does a pretty good job that, you know, when you jump or when you go to hit an enemy, it feels like you're getting a satisfying response from your input. But yeah, like I said, I don't sort of have the language to quite adequately describe what I'm thinking, but hopefully someone smarter than I out there can interpret what I'm trying to say.
Hopefully.
But I did think that was something that was quite well done with Shantae, and yeah, that's something that does endear itself quite nicely when I'm playing, you know, a 2D game like this, because I would say 2D games are my bread and butter, and I can be quite picky and quite finicky about the ones that I play for more than half an hour to an hour, and the ones that I, you know, just sort of don't quite stick with. But I'm curious, as we said before, Stephen, you played more of this than I did. How did you find the power-ups and the additional elements beyond the introductory stuff for Shantae?
I quite liked how they added on to things as you went on. So I hope this doesn't spoil anything, but sort of the first, I guess, major movement ability that you get. So, well, what it seems like happens is as you progress through the game, you'll be able to transform into different forms, each of which will be able to maneuver around the environment in a different way. The first of which is a newt who can climb up walls and do an air dash, which allows you to get over bigger gaps. It lets you attack things in the air more easily. And yeah, obviously climbing up walls lets you access areas you might not have been able to get to previously. And I found that the way that anime and, you know, the way it feels when you play was really quite satisfying. You sort of just get that really satisfying just zoosh in the air. It felt really good to do, and I had this mental note in my head of all these places like, oh gosh, I wish I could jump just a little bit higher to get over this ledge. And then once you get that, it just all these areas in my brain light up, so I can go back there and see what was there and get all those little heart squids that they were called. You collect these heart squids, take it back to a woman, and she squashes them into a heart container. It's very strange, but it's very fun to collect these things. And yeah, I really quite liked the way things open up in a fairly natural way, in a very Metroid-like way. The only thing I didn't like is that this game, like, maybe it's a symptom of it being on predominantly an Apple Arcade game. I couldn't find any sort of walkthrough guides online. So once I got to a particular point and I'm like, okay, I feel like I've explored every part of the map that I can and that looks like it might have an extra area. I can't get to it with what I have. I don't know what to do, and no one on the internet can tell me. So I kind of hit a bit of a brick wall at a certain point.
Well, now I'm feeling that the gauntlet has been thrown. I feel like I've got to keep playing and keep persisting with Shantae so I can try and get to that point and so we can try and figure it out, or that I can just, you know, try and beat it, play way past that point and say, oh yeah, I did that, you know, ages ago.
Can't wait. Well, if you can help me, then I'll be more than happy for you to, you know, rub it in.
because I think that's, you know, that's something that's quite you know, quite prevalent in, you know, games of this genre and this particular style. And yeah, we've mentioned before, you know, we've referred to it as a 2D platform adventure, or, you know, something that's akin to what would be called as a Metroidvania. You know, obviously games of a similar ilk to Metroid or Castlevania. But of course, if someone hasn't played those games, then that's a very
reductive
term. Doesn't mean anything to anyone.
A platformer where exploration is your main, I guess, driving force around everything.
But it's definitely something you know, it's very much, you know, like those games where there is, you know, backtracking, and, you know, there was that something, that little, whether it's that sort of Pavlovian reaction going off in my head when you're talking about making a note of places to go back to once you've got new upgrades, I'm sort of thinking, oh, I'm thinking back to my time with Hollow Knight and that sort of stuff.
Mm.
And that this, and I bring up Hollow Knight because, and Stephen had a chuckle at my notes earlier because I just put this rather verbose, rambly sort of comment in our Google Doc show notes about how I do think Shantae and the Seven Sirens is quite good, and that the developers have done such a great job here. But I really struggle to stick with a 2D game, like a 2D platform adventurer game like this, like the Metroids and Castlevanias of the world. I really struggle to stick with them unless they do something really innovative, or if they really, you know, excel in a particular area. And I'm thinking about recent examples of this genre in recent years. Hollow Knight, you know, locally Adelaide made, just like this podcast represent.
Mm-hmm.
Hollow Knight is a wonderful example of the genre. Another one that did quite well recently, Axiom, or I think Axiom Verge, however you pronounce
it. Yeah, that's what I've been saying, so hopefully that's right.
yeah, and even another one that's a little bit abstract in terms of the way that this one perhaps, you know, isn't quite up in the upper echelons. Struggling with my pronunciations here. In the upper echelons of Hollow Knight and Axiom Verge, but Yoku's Island Express, because that did something really different and innovated on the genre, because it added a pinball mechanic, and quite a well-implemented pinball mechanic to the sort of the 2D platforming and adventuring aspect. Whereas Shantae, I would say, is quite a good example of the genre, and especially, you know, on iPhone and Apple devices where you can't play the likes of Hollow Knight and that sort of thing, or at least not yet. I would say it's an excellent game to play if you don't have or don't have access to those other games, but sort of coming to Shantae after playing the likes of Hollow Knight or Yoku's Island Express, it just didn't quite stick the
standard, I guess.
Yeah, I think so, and that's not to say that Shantae is a low standard, because it's quite the opposite. It's quite a good standard, but it's just hasn't excited me on the same level as it has those games. And I think another one I forgot to mention, Iconoclasts, which had a really interesting story as well, but. Yeah, it's one that Shantae, I have a lot of respect for it, but it's not one that will really be sticking with me for you know, ages and ages, like these other games that I keep on, you know, ranting about.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it arrives in a fairly crowded genre, I guess. It's the last, feels like the last decade it has been the darling genre of the indie scene has been, you know, I want to make a Metroid-ish game. And I think it's because of that, you know, they haven't, or for a long time, weren't any games of that style. People really enjoyed, you know, your Super Metroids, your Symphony of the Night style games, and they just stopped being made for a while. And now, you know, that meant that people, I can make games now, I can jump into this genre and give it a try, which is fantastic because we've got a really good variety of this kind of game to play. But it does mean that to stand out, you really have to do something either to just be an absolute masterpiece of the genre, or to do something totally different, something innovative in that it makes it stand out from the crowd, I guess. And so, yeah, I think I haven't played Hollow Knight, Iconoclasts, Axiom Verge, any of these just luminaries of the genre that you've talked about. And I feel like that's maybe a failing on my part, but look, I'll sort that out one day. So yeah, it's not to say that Shantae is a fantastic example of the genre, and I think, you know, I really love the aesthetic, the music, the soundtrack is really, it just makes it fun to play. But yeah, I guess if you have played those more highly regarded examples of the genre, it might not stand out in your mind quite as much. But that's not to say it's a bad game. It's fantastic. It's just in a very crowded genre.
Yeah, and I think that probably sums up far better than what I was trying to say, and in half the time, no less. But it's such a saturated market to try and stand out in this particular genre and in this particular niche. But there's a reason that the Shantae games have been going for as long as they have. Mm. It's because they do what they do quite well, and they maintain a decent standard of platforming and action and the adventuring, exploring side of things. So this is absolutely a good game, but it's just so difficult to stand out in a market when we've got, as you so eloquently described, luminaries. That's such a lovely word. It's tricky. All I can really say is, if you are looking for an example of the genre to play on your phone or on an Apple device through Apple Arcade, then by all means, go nuts. Download Shantae, and you won't be let down by poor quality or that sort of stuff. Mm. It's a decent game. It's just not for me.
Yeah, and that's absolutely fair enough. I think I liked it a little more than you, potentially just due to not having the same points of comparison. But yeah, it's a pretty fantastic game, and it's worth giving a try if you have the subscription and want to get into the genre. It's a hell of a way to start.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's pretty well covers all bases there. And I think We've talked about two very, what are two very good games today in Tint and Shantae and the Seven Sirens. I was about to say the Seven Seas, but no, Shantae and the Seven Sirens, both very good games, very well made and very slick in their respective presentations, as different as they are. So that brings us to what we'll be playing for the next episode over the next couple of weeks. And the first one, Stephen, a bit of a new twist on an old classic.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this one. It was one of the bigger games that was sort of put up on screen when Apple Arcade was being announced. It's Frogger in Toy Town, coming from Q Games out of Tokyo and Japan, published by Konami. It's a Frogger game, so it's, we were talking about long-running franchises. I feel like there's not many longer running than Frogger at this point. But yeah, it looks pretty. I don't know how it'll play, but I guess that's something to look forward to finding out next time.
Yeah, and I believe it also received a pretty recent update, which adds some more co-op functionality and that sort of stuff. So it'd be interesting to see how that's implemented. And the other game is also a bit of an endearing and an ongoing legend in the form of Rayman Mini. So that's by Ubisoft, and I'm actually not sure which Ubisoft team developed that one, because I know they've got studios in Canada and Europe and across pretty well everywhere, but I've just written Ubisoft everywhere.
I did actually have a look, and I found it is Pasta Games, who are apparently something to do with Ubisoft Montpellier. I don't quite know how to say that. So Pasta Games, Ubisoft Montpellier is the specifics, let's say.
Well, there you go. And it's described, Rayman Mini, as a new epic journey for your hero. And if it's anything like what any of the recent Rayman games have been across mobile and console, I'm sure we're going to be in for a treat.
Yeah, gosh, the recent mobile Rayman games, so fantastic. So yeah, super, super keen to jump into it.
Yeah, so thank you very much once again for joining us on the Mobile Arcade Club. This has been episode 14, and we look forward to having you join us for episode 15. Thanks once again.
We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening to the Mobile Arcade Club. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us out heaps. You can follow the show on Twitter at MArcadeClub. There you can share any thoughts or feedback you have about the show, as well as chat about the club games or maybe even games you'd like to share with the show. You can follow Chris and myself too if you'd like. Our handles are in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.